Alright, the sound effect things we'll put down here, because somehow I moved them in the wrong place. What I really want is I want the openings over here. Yes, let's see.
This is the Schnauzer Logic Radio Company.
Oh shit, I guess we're working.
I love the way you look surprised at that.
Well, I didn't know who pushed the button. I kind of fucked myself up there. Oh my God, all right. A man at a job center in Denver sees an ad for a gynecologist assistant. Interested, he asks the clerk for details. The clerk explains, the job entails helping women out of their underwear and carefully washing their private regions so they're ready for the exam. The salary is $65,000 a year, and you'll have to go to Billings, Montana. That's about 450 miles from here. Relocate? No problem, says the man. I'll pack my bags. No. You're not going to pack your bags to relocate. That's where the end of the application line is.
Groundbreaking. Critically acclaimed.
Oh, wait. No, I fucked it up.
Hits.
No, that's... Oh, wait. It's all backwards. Okay, no edits.
All right, no edits.
Yeah. And now, the HBO original series.
Schnauzer Logic.
This is where the joke
was.
Yes, go ahead. Tell the joke. A man was. Yes, that's good. This is.
I don't have a joke. You
no,
know,
no. Tell this joke. You just heard it.
I just heard it.
Don't be parvis on me.
Okay. That would assume that I can have, you know, recall at this point.
You heard the joke. You laughed at the joke.
I heard the joke.
Tell us the joke.
Okay. A man hears of a job opening. And so he goes to apply.
Yeah?
It's for a gynecologist assistant.
Cool.
Yes. And he's excited by that, clearly. So what does the job entail? Well, the job entails helping the patients out of their underwear and washing their private parts.
Cool.
He says, okay. And then the doctor says, well, you'll have to go to Billings, Montana. And so the guy says, okay, no problem, I'll relocate. And he goes, no. The doctor says, no, not relocate.
Yes?
That's where the end of the line
is.
Clinton liberals, dittos.
I'm Dr. Mora, and I'm my poodle's mother.
Today on All Things Considered to Death, Moss.
Yeah, baby, show me your... Son of East, my friends, Son of East, and welcome. You have managed to tune in, latch on, and otherwise download that stream of bits known around the world as Schnauzer Logic. Yes, this is Schnauzer Logic. It's our episode number 69, which I was supposed to say at the beginning, and I didn't say at the beginning, and so maybe we'll get John DeKoven to say this is Schnauzer Logic episode 69.
It's
being recorded
already.
On November
episode.
the 25th, 2009. There you go. And my name is Robin Goldstein. I'm your host. I'm your buddy. I'm your pal. I'm also a straight white Buddhist vegetarian lesbian fraternity boy trapped to the body of a recovering transsexual woman patent attorney with a bizarre sense of humor and a master's degree in city planning. And we have a great show for you today. This is our day before Thanksgiving show. I don't actually think that we've done a day before Thanksgiving show here on Schnauzer Logic. I've done day before Thanksgiving shows on KSCO when we did Schnauzer Logic. Well, no, not when I did Schnauzer Logic, because that would have been on Saturdays. But we were doing some afternoon shows on KSCO. And I know that when I did the morning show with Sean occasionally and John and Parvis, we did a day before thanks. No, I didn't. No. No, I didn't. Because we finished that show before Thanksgiving came. Mm-hmm. That show wrapped up right before 9/11.
Oh, my.
That's a show that show would not have made it through 9/11. Because I think there would have been a philosophical difference between me and the station management as to the appropriate response. Did you know that they're releasing... Did you notice, by the way, Sona Vista, Sherry Stevens?
Sona Vista.
Did you know... I don't know if you... Are you a reader of Boing Boing?
No. Every now and then I do look at Boing Boing.
Huge fan here.
But not daily. And I really need to add that to my to-do list.
Huge fan of Boing Boing. BoingBoing.net. If you're not going there, just hit it once a day. They've actually recently reformulated the website layout so that you don't have to keep scrolling quite as far. Things are kind of old. And then usually what they used to do was, like, every article had the same amount of space, and so to go down for multiple days, you'd be scrolling and scrolling and scrolling and scrolling. Now I think after the first day, like, they compress the articles. Mm. So all you see is, like, a couple of headline things. So it's much easier to go through the back stuff. Anyhow, Boing Boing pointed out that WikiLeaks, are you familiar with WikiLeaks? WikiLeaks is a project to release previously confidential information into the public domain.
Hmm.
Just because something is no longer confidential doesn't mean that it's going to be easy to find. And so WikiLeaks has been releasing this information. Also, inter-office corporate documents which people release that are no longer confidential, they publish all of this stuff.
Wow.
And so...
And who publishes? WikiLeaks publishes?
WikiLeaks
publishes
gets
things?
These things and they publish them as a wiki, and the wiki is then mirrored around the world, because there have been situations where individual governments have not liked the fact that government memos talking about the cover-up of something mm-hmm. has been published in WikiLeaks, and so they've gotten a court injunction to shut down WikiLeaks in one country. But the beauty of the internet is it isn't in one country. It's a series of pipes, and they run everywhere. And so as a result, they've not been able to shut down WikiLeaks. And anyhow, WikiLeaks is now publishing, I guess in real time, all of the pages that were transmitted on 9/11, sort of starting like 5 hours beforehand all the way through, on any government pager, because all the government pager pages are considered public information.
And so as pagers, as in those little
yes,
things
and the little text
wear.
Pages. Yeah. Yes, so all the government people that had pagers and stuff like that, they're publishing. We'll talk about it. Meanwhile, let's say hello to Kip Adada. Michael's whirling.
Stroke or unload.
Dick Cheney. Harry Whittington. Happy Thanksgiving, my friend. Go, Whitney. Kenneth.
Home networking.
Sammy.
English motherfucker, do you speak it?
Parvis in absentia.
Nonsense babble.
Ali. Jerry Seinfeld.
Stop laughing. It's not fun.
And Barbara. Chelsea.
Take off my pants.
Thank you.
It's none of your business.
And of course.
I'm Brian Cox.
There you go. Okay, we're rolling. So anyhow, so WikiLeaks is publishing this, and what they've done is, and if you go over to WikiLeaks, you'll be able to see this. Part of it is there's a voyeuristic, kind of a ghoulish voyeuristic quality to it, because, you know, the traffic that occurs an hour before 9/11, I think what people are looking for is to see whether there are text messages that happened an hour before the planes mm-hmm. were in the air that said, situation blue, don't go to work today. Don't, you know, they're looking for the smoking. They're looking for evidence of a conspiracy.
Up, right.
Yeah, some kind of heads up or conspiracy. And they haven't found anything obvious yet. But it is interesting to sort of take a glimpse of the mundane of everyday life and then to see how people react to the information. Especially how they react to the amount of misinformation that comes out, right? There's the panic and confusion that thereby creates an amazing amount of misinformation, and how this begins to roll through the system is very interesting. And then if you go to the WikiLeaks page, or if you go to Boing Boing, you'll be able to find it. They've then set up I think it's like a re-edit site. I forget what it's called, but basically it's a place where you can remash the stuff. And what they're letting people do effectively is then comment. So you can take like a whole string of texts that don't necessarily follow each other, but if you think that you see a pattern, if you are a beautiful conspiratorial mind and you think you see a pattern, you can push them all together and then talk about them, and people can comment on them. So it's an interesting process. You wonder if all of that information had been available, all of the police intercepts and recordings of the wire calls and the phone calls around JFK's assassination, mm-hmm. what would have come out, right? I mean, all of that was lost. And so they've tried to pick through the pieces after the fact, but this is all electronic and it's all been captured. Apparently, it was all captured by a CIA kind of thing. So they didn't really know that they were capturing it. Like, it was not intentionally captured. It was the fact that we had been spying on our own damn selves. And the stuff then got captured, and then I guess it got declassified.
Wow.
See, I always assume, people always say to me, well, I don't want Google doing my Gmail. Like, I don't want Gmail because I don't want Google with my mail. You know, I don't want anybody else looking at my mail. And I think to myself, do you really think that there's nobody else looking at your email? Yeah. Well, how naive are you? The only way that there's nobody looking at your email is if you're not sending any email. My assumption is somebody is looking at my email. I always assume that. Not necessarily for malicious or malevolent purposes, but just because I assume that shit that I send is going to occasionally get sniffed.
You bet.
And that's just the way it is. I mean, Google or no Google. Gmail or no Gmail. Certainly at every corporation, you've got no expectation that people are not looking through email. My assumption is everything that I send for any of my clients using their internal system, and even stuff that I send from the outside to them, that's available to everybody who I never want to see it. That's the only way to do it, right? That's what they say. They always say that what you should assume is that when you're writing something in an email, that it will be viewed by the person you absolutely don't want to mm-hmm. see it. And that's the best way to stay out of trouble.
And that's happened to many people by yes. mistake.
Yes.
And lesson learned.
Well, one would hope.
Sometimes people are so upset about a particular individual that then when they're writing an email to their friend, they CC the wrong person just because
yes.
That person's in their mind.
Yes.
I've heard of that happening.
And then sometimes there's litigation, and in the process of that litigation, your attorney may ask for email threads of other people that thought that they were writing to explain how clever they were. But in fact, they were just explaining how they were effectively fucking themselves over. Hint, hint, nudge, nudge, wink, wink. I shall say no more. Anyhow, here we go. So, Sherry Stevens is in the studio with us. We're going to try to get Jason on the phone. We're going to try to get Sean on the phone. We're going to try to get Parviz. No, we're not going to get Parviz on the phone. Parviz is gone for Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that he went to Washington, D.C. to be pardoned. Thank you. See, that's better when there's more people in the room laughing. If it's just you, it's kind of charming, but it almost feels like pity laughter. I'll do
my radio shtick where I sit here and I nod.
Yes, very good. So we'll definitely be talking to Sean and Jason and John DeCoven. Also, we have the very first set of show notes written by my virtual assistant in Bulgaria. And so Boyana has written the first set of show notes, and I thought rather than put them up on the website, we would kind of go through them here. We'd read them, and we could do a little online critique. And what's interesting is she kind of created these show notes as though I were writing them. Oh, no, 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 my friend. You're going to get a byline on this. These are show notes as written by Boyana. So you're going to take full pride, full credit. We're gonna make sure that your name is front and center every week because these will be your show notes of the show as you perceive Schnauzer Logic. And she's done a terrific job. It's very entertaining. So we'll do that. Plus, assorted stuff and nonsense and a lot of oldies. Over the weekend, I saw Pirate Radio, which if you were in the UK or in Canada or other English-speaking countries other than the United States, I think was known as the boat that rocked. And so I saw that. It's a kind of an okay film. It was entertaining, but the music was great, and lots of great tunes in the soundtrack. And so it kind of got me going back through my 60s collection of really interesting songs. And we'll play some tunage. So there you go. So we got that plus assorted nonsense. So I'm excited to be here. Are you excited to be here?
I am.
2 weeks in a row.
2 weeks in a row.
Fuck. 69.
Yep.
Woo! All right. So that's what we're going to do. So we'll take our break here. We'll play a little tunage and we'll come back on the other side, hopefully with Dr. Meehan on the phone. You are listening to Schnauzer Logic. My name is Robin Goldstein and I am inviting you to please stick around.
I want to know why you like to dress up like a girl sometimes.
This is Schnauzer Logic.
Wake up, well I know I'm gonna be the man who wakes up next to you. When I go out,
Yeah, I know I'm gonna be the man who goes along with you. If I get drunk, well, I know I'm gonna be the man who gets drunk next to you. And if I heaver, yeah, I know I'm gonna be the man who's heavering to you. But I would walk 500 miles and I would walk 500 more to be the man who walked 1,000 miles to fall down at your door. But I'm working, yes, I know I'm gonna be the man who's working hard for you. And when the money comes in for the work I do, I'll pass almost every penny on to you. When I I'm gonna be the man who comes back home to you. And if I broke, well I know I'm gonna be the man who's growing older than you. But I would walk 500 miles and I would walk 500 more just to be a man who walks 1,000 miles to fall down at your door. I'm gonna be the man who's lonely without you. And when I'm dreaming, well I know I'm gonna dream about the time when I'm with you. When I go out,
when I go out,
well I know I'm gonna be the man who goes along with you. And
when I come home,
yes, I know I'm gonna be the man who comes back home with you. I'm gonna be the man who's coming home.
Welcome back. We're 18 minutes into this first hour of Schnauzer Logic. It is our 69th episode. It's being recorded on Wednesday. It's the 25th of November, 2009, the day before Thanksgiving. My name is Robin Goldstein. I'm your host, buddy, and pal. Straight white blues vegetarian lesbian turned here. I've talked about a recovering transsexual woman. www.schnauzerlogic.com. Robin at SchnauzerLogic.com, MySpace, fuck 'em. We're over on Facebook. We've got a Schnauzer Logic Facebook fan page. I don't know how you get there, but I'm guessing if you go to Schnauzer Logic, and if you go to Facebook and you put in Schnauzer Logic, you'll be able to find the fan page. We got a big, I think we have like 10 fans or something like
I'm
that.
I'm a fan.
Yeah, but, well, oh, cool. That's cool. John DeCoven's idea that we should have a fan page, which makes sense. So it was your idea. It was your idea we should have a fan page? Why did
I wrote it down.
I gave credit to John.
Well, that's just wrong.
That was definitely wrong. So, let's see. I gave credit to John, which I shouldn't have done. It was Sherry's idea, so we have a fan page. But, you know, even though with 10 fans on Facebook. And and by the way, we're on Twitter.com/SchnauzerLogic as well. And if you're into ham radio, you can follow me on Schnauzer on W6RDG.com. And I've also got a Twitter.com/W6RDG. But we had 500 downloads of the show last week.
Oh, good.
So considering the fact that we were off for 616 days.
Holy cow.
616 days between shows. The fact that 500 people decided, or 100 person 500 times, which actually, considering the obsessive compulsion nature of Schnauzer Logic listeners, is far more likely. There are three of us, and we're just downloading that same show over and over again, thinking maybe it's going to feel different the next time. We should push the button and get some other guys on here. Hold on a second. I got some more buttons to push here. Here we go. Oh, yeah. I haven't played this in a while.
I bought a bourgeois house in the Hollywood Hills with a trunk load of $100,000 bills. Man came by to hook up my cable TV. We settled in for the night, my baby and me. We switched round and round till half past dawn. There was 57 channels and
the Bald Jewish Guy in the 1988 VW van.
There we go.
The Bald Jewish Guy in the 1988 VW van.
Have you not heard that in a while? Is that right?
So long. That's what's been missing in my life, and I now realize that I'm searching for something.
It's funny, isn't it?
It is.
It's still funny.
I'm now a fan of Schnauzer Logic, by the way, on Facebook.
Oh, you are? Oh, cool. Very
well,
good.
I've requested to become a fan. We'll see if I get accepted.
Is that right? You have to be accepted to be a fan? I didn't realize that.
I guess you do, or maybe you don't.
I don't think so.
I click to become a fan. So.
I think it's all you have to do. You just have to click to say become a fan.
Okay, well, good. Now, don't be as annoying as John DeCoven. I get so many goddamn Bunjos things from him.
Yes. I wish there were a way to opt out some of that shit. Now, people may remember, or maybe you're just picking up the show now, that last week Sherry had commented that she was concerned that she didn't have her own theme song because, of course, you have your own. Not only do you have your own theme song that we just played, but you also have your little hamster dance thing, which we always play when we come back from you.
I get two theme songs.
You get two theme songs, but Sherry has her own theme song now, so we need to play Sherry's theme song.
Very nice.
You know, I've never heard that before in my life.
Nothing is not original. Sounds logic.
This is the best part, Jason. Listen to this.
It sounds like the Monster Mash. First call off.
Mais comme tout ça c'est compliqué. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I don't know where you found that.
And I realized that our good friend Dr. Meehan doesn't have a theme song either, so Sean now has his own theme song so we can use to introduce him. Here we go.
Me and my Sean Meehan.
No, just good enough for me.
Good enough for me.
Let's say Son of Beast to Sean Meehan as well.
I like it just disappearing there. I like the music dropping off right where the identity comes in.
Did you hear it? Well, because that's the only way she says Meehan. I'll play it again. Hold on.
Very clever.
Good enough for me. Mm-hmm. Good enough for me.
I was feeling
that's
pretty.
A winner.
I was feeling pretty clever.
That's quite. That gave me a good one.
I was feeling pretty clever. So, anyhow, welcome, guys. And a happy
Thank
day
before Sona Vista.
Sona Vista to you, Sean, and Sona Vista to Jason. And a happy day before Thanksgiving to both of you.
Oh, you too.
Thanks so much.
So, is that a thing, the day before Thanksgiving?
Say again?
Is that a thing, the day before Thanksgiving?
Era of Thanksgiving? I guess
celebrated?
I guess era of Thanksgiving. It's all carcasses night or something like that. I don't know. It's
part of the turkey day.
It is. It's part of the turkey festival celebration and the pardoning of the turkey. I was thinking that we had done Day Before Thanksgiving shows before. I said to Sherry at the beginning of the show today, but I don't think that's true. We were not doing airplay in November, and Schnauzer Logic was always a weekend show, so that wouldn't have been the day before Thanksgiving. So it would have had to have been a Casio Drive Monster. I think maybe Rachel and I did a Drive Monster on the day before Thanksgiving, but that's gone way the fuck back. By the way,
we did Schnauzer Logic the podcast on Wednesday, right?
That's true. So I suppose it's possible that we did, but I thought usually we bagged out of it, that we didn't do it.
I don't know. We'll have to look.
We'll have to go look.
Can we pay somebody to go look at the archives, one of your interns?
It's interesting that you should say that, because...
I'm a segue master.
You are the master of the segue, and not that thing that you ride around on with the that George Bush fell off of.
I want to try one of those, though, so bad.
Then you can be a double segue master.
Yeah.
But yes, so as I mentioned last week, I had hired a couple of virtual assistants from an online agency called Odesk, and I couldn't figure out which one to give the assignment to. One of the young women was in Bulgaria, and the other young woman was in the Philippines, and they were both, you know, fairly reasonably priced in what they were looking to do. Neither one spoke English as a first language, but they were both eager to take on the assignment. And so I thought, you know what, for the first week, we'll just let them both do it. And if it's entertaining, maybe we'll continue to let them both do it. And we'll kind of see what happens and timing and stuff like that. So I figured it'll be like a real-time interview, and I'll just pay them for their time. And Boyana, who wrote a set of show notes that I'm going to read to you guys, who will be able to kind of go through this here. I didn't want to put them online. I wanted to kind of do them here on the show, give them a live read. I think did a terrific job, but I had a very interesting experience with the other young woman. I did not hear anything back from her after. I think the show went up on Wednesday night. I didn't do any editing, as I promised I wouldn't. On Thursday morning, I sent a note to both of them, and I said, the show's online. Here's a link. Here's where you can find it. Download it. I would like to see a paragraph on each segment, so four or five paragraphs would be great. And, you know, I'll give you 4 hours. Basically, I'll give you the length of the show plus an extra hour, and since this is the first week, I'll give you another half hour. So it was 2.5-hour show, 3.5 hours. I'll give you 4 hours total, so, you know, I'll just bill up to 4 hours. Go. And by Saturday, I had not heard anything from this other woman. So I contacted her through the system, and I said, I just want, you know, everything okay? Did you understand the assignment? Maybe you weren't able to get a copy of, you know, you couldn't get the notes. And she wrote back, no, I was having internet problems. My computer was down. You know, my dog was at the vet, and, you know, and the sun was in my eyes. I'll get to it right away. Okay, fine. You know, no big deal. I looked on Sunday, and I noticed that 2.5 hours had been billed against my account by this other young woman. I thought, oh, that's really cool. And the thing is, you can actually look and see what they're working on. There's the software that they use for this virtual agency takes screenshots so that you can see what they're looking at on the screen. And so I'm looking at the screen, and they're doing mail through Yahoo and lots of YouTube videos. Miley Cyrus is in the USA, big popular thing. So this is for 2.5 hours. Also looking for other jobs on Odesk. So I sent her an email and basically said, you know, as an employer rather than, you know, as a friend, it's like, what the fuck, you know? And she wrote back, oh, I'm sorry. My cousin used my computer, and he logged in when he used the computer, and I'll do the project. I won't charge you. I'll do it outside of the system. Which is, I think, like buying things through eBay where somebody says, well, let's just buy it outside of eBay and then, you know, we'll kind of skip the charges. She said, I'll do it without, but I'm like, I'm only on the hook for 4 hours. So I figured, well, there's a limitation as to how much I'm going to get on, you know, screwed out of here. So I was, okay, no problem. She goes, I'll do it outside the system. I was like, okay, fine. I said, do it outside the system and we'll kind of call it square. And I looked the next day, Sunday morning, and, or maybe Sunday afternoon, whatever it is. And there's another 2 hours of stuff back to Miley Cyrus. I got to look at that fucking video. That must be that's a hell of a video, my friend.
It's a great video.
Party in the U.S.
Having watched it for several hours myself. And I wish I got paid to do so.
Well, yeah, exactly. So I wrote and I said, listen. So the first thing I tried to do was I tried to basically just dump her off the project. But I didn't want to give her, like, it doesn't give you a chance to, like, give them a no grade. Like, I basically wanted to give her an incomplete. I didn't want to fail her, because she didn't do the work for me. Maybe really somebody was using her computer, so I didn't want to give her a zero. You know, Mr. Blutarsky, 0.0, you know. But
zero
I... Thank you, Dean Wormer. But I also didn't want to, like, give her a good grade, because that wouldn't be, you know, that wouldn't be accurate. I wanted to kind of know, I wanted to kind of know bill her, you know? And, but it was not possible to do that. So I then wound up, anyhow, I wound up writing back to her and I said, listen, I don't know what's going on there with you and your cousin and whatever, but this is not working for me. So let's just, you know, I said, you know, I'm going to, and she goes, oh no, please give me another chance. Please, please, please give me another chance. So I said, if you...
So Lucy came out with the football once again.
So I said, all right, here's what I'm willing to do. Reverse all the charges so that the account is zero. And we'll call last week a wash. And then after we do this week's show tonight, the show that we're doing right now, show number 69, then write the notes for that show and we'll pick it up from there and see how it goes. And so she said, so that's what I said. And I waited 24 hours. I got no response from her in 24 hours. So I just figured, fuck it, I'm pulling the trigger. And I wrote back to the, you know, to the administrative thing there. And I said, listen, I gotta terminate this woman. I'm being charged for stuff that I didn't do and blah, 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 blah. So they said, all right, we'll just terminate her without any kind of reference or whatever it is. And then like the next day, she wrote to me and she said, oh, I don't know how to reverse the charges, which of course apparently like they all know how to do that, or it's supposed to be easy. So anyhow, so she's not, you know, maybe there was something going on with a cousin using the, I don't know, I wasn't there.
Cut your losses. Yeah, you made the right decision. Cut your losses at this point.
Yeah, so I don't know, but that's not gonna happen. But Boyana,
it's time to be a ruthless American captain of industry.
Thank you.
It is time to step up. And like the man with the funny hair, you're fired.
I was thinking Don King.
Well, he fires people too, I'm sure, right and left. If you've got funny hair, you know how to do it.
Okay, thanks. I got the... So anyhow, Boyana, though, came through with a series of notes. And I thought I would give them a world premiere read right here on Schnauzer Logic. I'm looking for my world premiere read... where's my music? Yes, exactly. Here we go. All right, here we go. So make some notes, because we're going to do some corrections, and then she'll have some feedback for next week. So this is Schnauzer Logic Radio Show, Episode 68, Notes. Sano Vista, friends. It's close. It's a great pleasure to write the show notes of Schnauzer Logic after such a long break. And the pleasure is getting even greater when we know that episode 68 from the history of the show was a lot of fun. All of our, quote, suspects, our dear friends were there. Dear friends feels like a very Soviet kind of...
Yeah, I was thinking, this is the Bulgarian one, isn't
yes.
it?
Yes, it is.
Suspect.
Yeah.
It is very Soviet as well.
Huh? Yes, all of it. Yes, exactly.
All of it.
Suspect slash, dear friend.
Dear friends. all of the quote suspects, our dear friends, were there. You know, that actually sounds pretty fucking sinister. At Robin's house or on the phone line, Sherry, Parviz, John DeCoven, Sean, Jason, and Ken, all or almost every best friend of Schnauzer Logic Radio Show was there to participate in this first chapter after a rest that lasted more than anybody has ever expected. But let us... But
after a long winter's nap.
Yes.
We all died and got resurrected.
A lot of people had hoped it would go this long, but no one really expected it to.
But let me focus on what was all about in episode 68. Number one, as already mentioned, it lots of laugh and fun. All the time and about everything. Having fun
damn
in front of, damn Skippy. Having fun in front of the microphone is not something new for Schnauzer Logic, but this time it was really hard for all the people invited to stay serious for at least a couple of minutes. That's what she took. I mean, that's pretty cool. That's kind of interesting insight. Paragraph 2. However, there was still time for quite serious themes, including politics, social networks, pop culture, new music, Bluetooth devices. All of you that didn't listen the show yet, what are you waiting for? So she's already on board with this.
Yeah.
And so on. Sean and Jason gave interesting information about their life and work, everything recent that happened to them. If we have to be honest, we have tried to make a picture of what was going on in the life of everybody in episode 68 for the past 18 to 20 months. Obama, Twitter, Facebook, the lack of popularity from MySpace. Did we forget something? Oh, Michael Jackson's death, of course. Everybody thinks the same about this case. It was the event of the year. However,
I wish we could have one every year.
Like Jesus. However, all of the guests gave their opinion about the recent events in the USA, including Jay Leno's recent attempts, while they were not laughing their asses off. And you wonder why they hate us. Or maybe love us. This may be doing more to help relations. Anyhow, let's see. John introduced his comedy show center, The Bunjos. I like The Bunjos. It's like we're now pretty sure that this place is worth visiting, and while you are figuring out when to go, you can become a fan of it on its Facebook profile. Ken Turetsky on the phone gave us interesting information about his recent work, or should we say, quote, lack of work. And then there's a little smiley face emoticon.
Wait, I like how she's pretty sure now that she should go to Bunjo's. She was kind of on the fence before, but after the show,
yeah,
she's way into it.
It's worth a trip from anywhere, even Sofia, Bulgaria. Also, we realized that he had some serious health problems, which, thank God, are now gone. Also, we found some time to hear one of his songs, Let Love In, which can be found on his official site. Then it says, John is no longer a plumber. I think she meant Parviz. So, but that's the first factual error that I can find in this. That's pretty good. So,
this rocks.
Huh?
No, I think she said that we had exciting lives in the past 20 months. That would be the first factual error.
Yeah, I guess. So I'll just substitute here. Parviz is no longer a plumber because the Plumber Guild is not doing its job very well. But we are confident that he will find a better job without having to take money, quote, under the table, as he said he can. Again, very Soviet.
Yeah, he's going to be thrown in the gulag in no time at all.
Finally, but not by importance, Robin gave us important advice on how to survive when we have a serious issues such as his health problems in the last couple of years. Total ignorance of bad people and acceptance of yourself in the way that you want to be, no matter what anybody else is thinking of you. That was episode 68 from Schnauzer Logic Radio Show, just in a few words, but they cannot describe the joy to be back online. The pleasure was indescribable. until next time.
Yes, it was.
I've paid women to tell me that the pleasure was indescribable.
No. Not indescribable. Indescribable.
A great board game, by the way.
Indescribable. Indescribable. Until next time. And then she quotes Angelus Arian: show up, pay attention, tell the truth, and don't be attached to the outcome.
Woo, I'm thinking very nice.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Nice.
She's hired.
She nailed it.
Yeah.
She did.
She nailed it. So, Boyana, the gig is yours. Thank you. On behalf of the band, I hope we got the audition. thank you so very much. The gig is definitely yours. I like this. I think, you know, write it in your own, you can write it from your own perspective. So as you write it next week and the week after, you don't have to write it as though you're writing it from our perspective. You'll write it, you're basically the official archivist, if you will, of the Schnauzer Logic Radio program. So there you go. Anyhow,
that was surprisingly wonderful.
Wasn't it?
that really, you know, I had expected something drier, something, this was, it communicated the ebullience.
Now you're going to knock the Bulgarians again, aren't you?
No, I don't think I knocked the Bulgarians at any time during this. I just think that, you know, many, many years of Eastern Bloc rule could possibly have tempered their sense of joy and humor.
But it hasn't. Schnauzer Logic has brought back that humor to the
I think it has. We are working to rejuvenate the basic human pleasures of joy and comradeship behind the former Iron Curtain. I'm excited about the work we do.
I like to think of it as Paris Joika. okay, that hurt. That hurt me to say it. I now have a stitch in my side. All right. So, Dr. Jason, I know that you're tweeting all over the place over on KNX _ Jason. Is that right?
I try, yes.
In the mornings, but those are really hard news stories for the most part.
My Twitter feed is more tied to the station. I mean, it's not, you know, my personal life at all.
What's happening?
Here's the thing. I don't really get Twitter. I get it more than I used to. When it first came out, I didn't really understand it at all. And now I just realize, you know, it's basically like the status updates from Facebook, and that's all it is. But I don't understand why people are so gaga over it or how it... I mean, it's really such a cultural phenomenon that it's sprung up so quickly, and it's just, it's dominating everywhere, and I don't get it. It's overwhelming to me. It's too much information. It's too many people to follow. It makes my head hurt. It really does. I don't get it. I don't understand why people would be into it or follow it.
Isn't it unusual to realize that you may not be the target audience? I mean, I hate to say this, but maybe you're too old.
I guess so.
And I don't mean that in a critical way, but I think that, you know, if you talk to people who are in their teens and 20s, right, absorbing that much information that quickly is not difficult. I mean, that's sort of what they expect. So
sure. And it's clear that a lot of people my age are these media producers at TV stations and newspapers. They don't exactly get it. Every morning, I follow Good Morning America. I follow all the morning shows, so I find out what they're doing in the
sure.
morning. Good Morning America every morning tweets. Their first tweet every morning is, "Good Morning America." What information are you giving me there? What are you telling me? There's nothing there. That really doesn't, I think, use the medium properly. And I think a lot of these people don't know how to use the medium properly, and I might be one of them. But when you go to search for a lot of things, sometimes we have stories involving high schools. I mean, there was one big story around here within the last week where a couple kids were beat up at a middle school because they were redheaded, and last week was Kick a Ginger Day.
Oh, right.
A thing that started on Facebook, I guess, and has some South Park connection to beating up kids with red hair. They're called gingers.
Right. That's actually a British expression.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So whenever there's a story that involves a school like that, I'll go to Twitter and I'll see what people are talking about. And you can usually find the kids from the school.
Well, there you
and
go.
That's when I kind of get Twitter and I kind of get the use of it. And I see how people are using it. I mean, kids use it to communicate. I mean, that's the thing that they use. They go back and forth on it and like crazy. So, you know, I get that. Maybe it's not for me. But at the same time, everybody in my industry, in my age, they're trying to use it. You know, you see it on CNN, you see it on everything's trying to adopt some kind of Twitter persona. And I just think it's too much.
It's Twitter is like having the ability to stick your dick into the popular culture zeitgeist.
We're prophylactic.
Copyright Robin Goldstein, 2009, all rights reserved.
The problem with that is now I'm picturing you do that.
Well, don't picture me doing that. Picture a million of your friends and the GMA producers doing that.
We're prophylactic. Because basically you
maybe two
are Twittering with everyone any of them have ever Twittered with. So think about that.
That feels right, though. It doesn't necessarily feel good, unless it feels bad, in which case it definitely feels good. I think that we talked about it last week, these social media sites kind of reach a level of critical mass, if you will, right? And then they become sort of everywhere in the pop culture, and they're on everyone's. I have to tell you, I think Twitter is kind of over at this point. I think that the explosion of everybody being into Twitter, I think that bubble passed this summer. And now it feels to me like we're on the other side of that. And so, yes, people are still doing it and they're Twittering every morning, but I think that the Illuminati are looking for the next thing. You know, the digerati they're on to whatever the next thing is going to be. And Twitter is merely a tool that is sometimes...
I hope so, because to me, there's nothing more... I don't know, gross about our culture in Twitter. It's so narcissistic. I mean, at least with Facebook, Facebook, you can at least say, oh, you're catching up with your friends and you're looking at what other people are doing. But the conversations on Twitter seem so one-sided, and it brings out every little mundane, stupid thought that all these people are doing, and who the fuck cares?
Well,
you know what I found good, just briefly with my experience with Twitter, though?
Do you have a Twitter account? Oh, you don't have a Twitter account, though. You're just reading Twitter?
Yeah.
Okay.
There are certain people who, Twitter, who give, Jason, you could probably appreciate this. They give industry, just little industry notes. Oh, yeah, just heard Spider-Man 4 goes into production in blah, blah, blah. So-and-so is going to be directing. You can, check out their, hiring needs on the Variety work page
right.
or whatever. Independent movie makers night at night.
I agree, I do find uses in terms of media for a lot of the information. But one of the problems is, anybody can tweet anything, and verifying that is, tough. So it's hard to back that up.
Do you have any questions for? But as long as we're on the line, do you have any questions for Keith Olbermann? Because I can make sure that he answers him in his tweet today.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, anybody can and then all of a sudden somebody thinks you're Keith Olbermann.
Actually, almost 10,000 people think I'm Keith Olbermann.
10,000 people think
almost 10,000 people think
and
I'm
that's,
Keith.
That's funny. I think that's great. I think that's a great satire of the cultural phenomenon.
10,000 suspects / dear friend. Keith Olbermann.
And but the other hard part for me as a media producer is there's just so many sources now. I mean, you're expected to be on top of all this stuff. You have to follow so many people, and a lot of them are good and give decent information, and it's great to get these tips. But there's just too much information coming in.
I'm very, very. I gotta be honest. I'm very surprised to hear you be so down on this. I would imagine at the very least you would have been sort of neutral. I'm not disappointed, but I'm just very, very surprised.
I'm frustrated.
Okay,
is what it is. It's too much. I feel like it makes me nauseous. It's just too much stuff.
All right.
And then I try to go on there myself and give the updates, and I wonder, does anybody care? Is anybody following? Does it matter?
But that's an
existential crisis that this has brought on.
Twitter has triggered something that has disconnected you from your superego.
Yeah, it hurts.
Okay, try rubbing it with liniment. All right, can you hang around?
I can. Yeah.
Let's take a break. When we come back, I want to talk a little.
I thought you were going to take a call.
I'd love to take a call.
Let's take a call.
When I come back, I'd love to talk. You want to talk Obama or you want to talk Oprah?
We could do both. We could talk about the fact that Oprah wasn't at the Obama big state dinner last night.
I will let you guys decide during the break what we're going to do. We'll play a little tunage and we'll come back on the other side and talk to a little bit more with Sean and Jason and Sherry and me and you. You're listening to Schnauzer Logic. Robin Goldstein inviting you all. Please stick around.
Around for more Schnauzer Logic.
Come to me tonight. I'll take a never. strings on my cape. Judy in the skies, hey, that's what you want. A lemonade pass with your brand new car. Say, kind of low bass, come tell me tonight. The Judy in the skies, that's his.
On mine, that's what I found too. Yeah.
Welcome back. Welcome back. We're about 51 minutes into this first episode of, no, not first episode, 69th episode, woo, of Schnauzer Logic, being recorded on the 25th of November 2009. Robin Goldstein, host buddy and pal, saying welcome back in Santa Vista to Sherry Stevens.
Santa Vista.
See, she's doing it with an accent.
I can do accents.
Yeah, she's doing it with an accent. And let's say a welcome back in Santa Vista to Jason Netherton.
All the single ladies, 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 all the single ladies,
There you go. That's how that's my mix. That's DJ Baby Pants.
DJ Baby Pants, where have you gone?
DJ, yeah, really, we miss DJ Baby Pants.
Put a ring on there.
Oh, God. And welcome back inside of Easter to Sean Meehan. So I'll let you guys lead the next segment here. No edits. Jason, Sean, one of you.
I can't wait to see how this comes back in the show notes.
There was much nothing.
I don't know. I don't really want to talk about Obama because...
Oh, okay.
I feel like even speaking his name gives credence to this, out-of-country-born Islamic fundamentalist sleeping agent. This, you know, he's just... It's horrible. How did he ever become... He's run by Sheikh Al Jazeera, and he is... it's terrible. I can't even talk to him. Talk about him. Talk anything. It's horrible.
Can we talk about Oprah?
We can talk about
is
Oprah.
Is she run by... Is she a...
She's one of the Muslim
sleeper agent who has been snuck into the midst of American pop culture. I don't even know anymore.
Her name is Oprah.
Now all people of color are suspect.
here's the thing about Oprah that I find is...
I was listening to Fox.
Given our discussion last week about Leno and, you know, changing things and why change something when you got a hit and... does it just ruin your career, which it seems to have done for NBC and Leno? You got a question. Oprah's taking, you know, her number one show, and she's the richest, most powerful woman in the world, and going to try to recreate it, basically, but in a new form. So is that smart? Is that going to work? I personally think pretty much everything she does is pretty well-received, so I'm not too worried about her. But, you know, you got to question. If I were her, if I had her money, I would just sit around and, you know, shoot people. Or, you know, just do things that, you know, people with, that are really rich can do. Why? I don't get it.
I'm trying to make that connection, but...
Well, think Dick Cheney and his good buddy.
Thank you, that helps.
I would hire people to run around on my big ranch in Montecito, and I would just, you know, I'd hunt them for sport.
Most dangerous game. What makes you think Oprah isn't doing that right now?
Did you say hunt or hump?
Either one. Doesn't matter.
Even now, Stedman is in a loincloth running for his life somewhere.
Hey, I'm glad you mentioned that. Am I the only one that thinks that the Attorney General looks like Stedman? that every time I see it was Stedman. Every time I see the Attorney General of the United States, his name is, was it Eric Holder?
Holder.
He looks like Stedman, doesn't he?
He does. He's got that porn star mustache, which Oprah likes so much. It tickles her in the right places.
I think more people would acknowledge that if they actually saw more of Stedman.
But they don't. Have you noticed? You don't hear his name anymore at all. It's not even brought up at all.
No. But they're still together, apparently, right?
Apparently. Gail King was at the Obama thing last night, the big state dinner, star-studded, high-powered.
Yes.
Oprah was not there, but Gail King was.
And
why? I don't know. Nobody called me to ask me. Nobody said anything. And you know, I'm tight with Oprah. That's the thing. Is her and I are friends.
We have a photograph showing this. Actually,
it is in fact the case. Yeah.
Chance meeting in the desert.
And she didn't call me. She didn't get my advice on moving the whole show out to the Discovery Channel, Health Network, whatever she's doing.
You know, there's a tremendous amount of this kind of backbiting. I mean, I took a little look, and I mean, not talking about the president directly, right? But the whole dust up over whether or not he should have bowed to the Japanese prime minister, and whether or not he should have, you know, bowed or curtsied or shook the hand of the man who shook the hand of a man across the sea from Galilee, and you know, who they invited and why.
Let's all remember, though, in the midst of this controversy, we had a president not too long ago barfed on the president of Japan. Okay, so it's hard for me to get all worked up.
Progress.
Over Obama blew the bow. Okay, he didn't vomit on any foreign head of state.
We had a president not too long ago who was walking hand in hand with the king of Saudi Arabia, walking, and they were holding hands.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Yeah, but that was beautiful. That was.
It was beautiful, but that's custom.
As long as you don't do that on Good Morning America, it's okay.
Oh, yeah, Adam Lambert. I mean, jumping around here as we all are. So, is that career suicide, or does that make him the biggest thing since sliced...
What's everybody talking about the last 3 days? Adam Lambert, who has a record coming out, or came out yesterday. Adam Lambert. I mean, it's great publicity for him. It was a smart move, and... the stuff that he's been saying the past 2 days, I think, is absolutely 100% right. Nobody bats an eye when girls, they do, they get a little, you know, in an uproar when Madonna kissed Christina Aguilera and Britney Spears, but not in a mean way. They were just kind of shocked. But women do this all the time. They walk around on stage and they have crazy costumes and it's very sexual. So when a gay man gets up and does it, I guess, you know, everybody kind of freaks out, and that's, you know, I don't know that America was necessarily ready for something like that. And the American Music Awards are never really seen as the groundbreaking music awards.
No, it's Dick like Clark. It's fucking Dick Clark, America's oldest teenager.
And so that, you know, you got to consider the venue. Had he done this on the MTV Music Awards, people would have probably expected it a little more. But I think it was brilliant. It was brilliant for his career. He got his name out there and everybody's talking about him.
Wow.
All I can say, yeah, I agree, Jason, America wasn't ready. It takes these kinds of events, I think, to get America ready. I desperately wish that I lived in an America that was ready. And it's going to be these kinds of moments that will create little flashpoints that I think will open up the dialogue or begin the desensitization process or do whatever it is that has to happen so that this is not some kind of an extraordinary, there's no big hoopla around something like this 10 years from now.
Yeah, Yeah, and I mean, frankly, I'm surprised that there was so much hoopla around it. I mean, you know, I saw the video. It wasn't anything. I mean, the worst part about it was his singing. I mean, he sucked. The singing wasn't good. That was the most
annoying
thing.
You or Robin may know this just from looking at news stories about this, but I heard that ABC received 1,500 calls. I think I got that off the ABC News.
Yeah, that, was the line, that was the line for
right.
them.
1,500 calls. I know that I can't remember whether it's an order of magnitude more, or two orders of magnitude, or whatever it is that indicates most people accept as an indicator of how many people are actually put off. Yeah. But it still seems like it's a fairly minor component of the GMA audience. And I was kind of pleased to hear that, but I was also a little off-put that GMA would be so responsive to those people.
I don't think the Janet Jackson thing generated 1,500 complaints to the FCC.
No, because that was booby.
Yeah, I know. My communications with the FCC were all positive about that.
That was booby. We're okay with booby. What you're basically saying is that this is... the tiny head of homophobia kind of peeking out ever so slightly. Its little pink head just kind of pushing through.
Its little well-lubed head pressing against the membrane of the
turtle
American psyche.
The turtle of homophobia.
And the ironic thing about this is a guy who competed on a contest that America votes for the winner, and he made it to second place.
Yes.
I mean, he was all the way up there, and by accounts of a lot of people, he should have been the winner.
We didn't want to see him as the top, though. We wanted to see him as the bottom.
I wanted to see him in between.
With some mail.
So, you know, we're torn as a nation. But when you look at American Idol voters, it's mostly young people, and the young people don't care. They're fine with this. It doesn't matter. It's all, you know, the older people.
So what you're basically saying is that the audience for American Idol are young gay men, whereas the audience for the American Music Awards are middle-aged and older gay men.
Exactly. Yeah. 100%.
Okay.
People who understand the limits of their own public display of homosexuality. The Rock Hudson, shall we say.
Okay. You just made that name up.
No, and to our Bulgarian note writer, I'm in love with you, and B, there really is, or was, a guy named Rock Hudson. You can IMDb him. That's not a joke. And he was gay.
Okay. All right. Moving on, because I know that we got to get Jason tucked into bed pretty soon as well.
Yes. So, I have to work tomorrow. On Thanksgiving, I have to work.
Get out of here. So tell us.
I work in radio. I've never not worked a Thanksgiving. I mean, in my whole career.
So what are you? So, but you go to work fairly early, and then you go to work real fucking early, to be honest, and then you kind of finish. So what are you doing for Thanksgiving dinner tomorrow?
At my parents. All right. 5 o'clock dinner. Mom's making all the food, and family and some friends, and it'll be a nice thing. Probably get a little bit drunk, and then drive home.
Are you okay?
That's the American way to celebrate.
Are you were at one point a vegetarian. Are you still a vegetarian?
I'm not, actually.
When did that happen?
It's been about 2 years.
Since we did the show last, probably.
Yeah, pretty much. This will actually be my second Thanksgiving as a meat eater.
And what was it that turned you that sort of turned you back to where you were?
You know, it's my part of it is my schedule because of the hours that I work, I'm just constantly tired, and I thought maybe a change in my diet would fix that. It hasn't.
Okay.
But the worst part of it is now I eat this food, but I feel incredibly guilty about it because philosophically, I'm still opposed to eating meat. But, you know, once you get back on the horse, it's hard to stop eating it.
Why don't you take another bite out of that? Yeah, I don't think getting back on the horse is what the vegetarian objects to.
Then you just feel guilty after you eat, right?
I'm a heavy guy. I always feel guilty after I eat. It's part of my complex.
So what you're saying is it's a win-win.
Everybody's good with it. Everybody's good with it.
Well, you know,
you're still vegetarian, yes, Robin?
I am still a vegetarian, yes.
Congratulations.
Thank you. It's nothing. Yes. Sean, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Oh, no. I was just thinking.
Oh, wait. No, I did, actually. I meant to interrupt Sean.
Yes. What about PETA?
he's not really sorry. Get that in the show notes too. The idea, you know, I watched when I was making the conversion to vegetarianism. I watched those horrible PETA videos where they sneak onto the farms and the animals are in just horrible condition and it's just dreadful. These, you know, just these. It's just Murder Inc. for animals. And and then I realized after a couple of years of being a vegetarian, you know what? The best thing I can do for those animals is kill them, put them out of their misery, and eat them.
And enjoy
They're
them.
Just,
yes, and enjoy
I'm
them.
I'm keeping them alive. So I really think that it is incredibly difficult if you have a tough schedule to remain perfectly true to your vegetarian spirit.
Really?
I think it's
more of a cop out. I mean,
the 2 o'clock in the morning, little cows come out.
Tempting you.
Yeah, but they're all basted and delicious, little cows.
Moo.
I thought maybe I needed more protein or whatever, but you can get the right amount of protein being vegetarian.
You can get way too much protein being vegetarian. That's not an issue. Yeah.
I think it was just me trying, you know, wanting an excuse.
What do you feel the guiltiest about eating?
That's the thing. There's no one thing I feel guilty about. It's all the same. But, you know, I'll eat a baby human. It didn't feel the same as eating a cow. It's all the same to me.
But only within the first trimester. Oh, that was. I'm sorry. That'll need to be edited
that even
out.
Made me cringe.
Me too.
You know, like Sean said, we've seen the ways it's all prepared. None of it is cruelty free. So eating foie gras to me is the same as eating chicken. All these animals are tortured beyond belief, and it's sad and it's horrible. And one day maybe I'll get the constitution and the internal fortitude to stop eating meat again. But right now,
meantime, it's all in the marinade.
it's so tasty. I mean, it really is.
And well, I think you can. You should be able to have a cap and trade policy here. You should be able to buy sort of vegetarian credits.
My meat eating.
And still
exactly.
maintain his
for
cred.
For every Whopper you consume, you have to pay a certain price. And I think it'll. I think then the meat addicted can stay meat eating, but they have to pay a significant price.
It doesn't save the chickens, Sean.
I'm gonna have nightmares about that tonight. Why did you say that?
Now, did you say that you were a vegetarian, Dr. Meehan?
Yeah, I've been for, I think I was.
Since Jason gave it up. It's a conservation of
vegetarian.
Prior to, I'm part of his cap and trade deal.
Yes, you are.
Yeah.
You're like clean coal.
He buys the meat credits. And,
yes.
Yeah, no, I remain just because, actually, I don't have. A super compelling reason that stands over other reasons. I don't know if we lived in a different kind of economy
mm-hmm.
where meat. I am not against the idea of killing animals and eating them.
Sure.
I mean, I think that there are certainly, you know, no one goes to an Aboriginal group and says, "Hey, lay off." You know, your karma's getting bad.
Because they don't speak English.
But I think the way we do it.
Group would speak English.
Thank you. Same joke twice.
the way we do it is so ugly that, you know, when you go to a store and you can get some little chicken and it's $5.99, all roasted, rotisseried or whatever, and you just think, wow, that's what your life was worth? How horrible to just be $5.99 after cooking. After preparation, after all sorts of humans have had to touch it and get their penny out of the transaction and move it along the chain, you can't have a decent life for a little chicken when their market value is so low. You can't have a decent life for a cow when you can buy a significant chunk of meat for a dollar at McDonald's. You know, it's just, I don't know. I feel like that has to change.
So you're looking for the $100 McNugget.
I am.
$99 burger.
Only exactly. Carl's Jr.
that's part of the problem. That's never going to change. I mean,
I think it will.
I think our culture is just too far gone.
I think that will change. It'll change because of economic and environmental pressures.
Sure.
I think meat is an artificially cheap commodity. And I think that the things that allow meat to be so cheap, at least some of those factors, are going to have to change, whether we want them to or not. I don't think you can keep tearing down rainforests, growing beef in Brazil, and shipping it affordably back to the United States and selling it, you know, for the prices that we're able to get it here, in like hamburgers and things. I don't think that that is a sustainable economic model. So I think we will just naturally eat less and less meat over the next decade.
Sarah Palin says that we can do that for indefinitely.
Well, you know, I kind of dig her because she just goes out and shoots her own from the air. So, you know, maybe she can up there. You know, I don't know. There's probably a lot of meat that is not undercover at any given time.
Did you guys see the little video that was made of the people standing online? I think it was in Ohio at a Borders waiting to meet Sarah Palin and have her autograph their books.
No.
Oh, you didn't.
No.
Are you willing to wait around for one more segment here and let me play it for you?
Sure.
All right. This is. Have you heard this?
No.
And Sean, have you seen this or heard this?
Not at all.
Oh, okay. Well, then we got something to talk about. All right. Here's what we're going to do. We'll take another break. We'll do a quick song. You had asked me who that was in the last break, by the way. The song is Judy in Disguise with Glasses, and it is from John Fred and his Playboy Band. Hmm. That's who did Judy in Disguise.
And who is the John Hyatt?
No, John Fred.
I thought it was John, Fred.
No.
Okay.
No. How are you confusing Boyana?
I'm sorry. Never mind.
Now you're confusing Boyana. No. It's no. And there you go.
It just sounded like John Hyatt to me.
It did?
Yeah.
You know, if you listen to that song, and because you've been listening to this on the podcast, you can back it up. There's a little Nirvana harmony going on in there, which is pretty cool. That's a song from the 60s. I'm trying to think. I wish I knew when that song was originally recorded. I'm doing a quick online look here. Judy in Disguise. Wikipedia. Here we go. Gotta trust Wikipedia. Judy in Disguise with Glasses was a hit for the Louisiana-based John Fred and his Playboys in early 1968. The song, co-written with bandmate Andrew Bernard, Andy Bernard from The Office, was a parody of the Beatles hit Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds. I had no idea. According to the Billboard Book of Number One Hits by Fred Bronson, the song was inspired by Fred's listening to Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds and mistakenly believed the lyrics that the song were Lucy in Disguise with Diamonds. Coincidentally, it went on to knock Hello Goodbye, another Beatles tune, off the number one spot on the Billboard Hot 100 for 2 weeks in January 1968. However, it also struck Fred with a novelty act image he was never able to shake. Nevertheless, the song remains a favorite on oldies-oriented radio stations and right here on Schnauzer Logic.
Should I keep my feet on the ground and reaching for the stars?
Yes, you should, Casey. All right, so here's what we'll do. We'll take a break. We'll play a little more tunage from that side. Let's see. I've got The Unicorn by the Irish Rovers. We could play that. I got a little Dave Clark 5. I got a little Manfred Mann. Anybody calling out any requests of any of these songs?
Is it a Manfred Mann cover of a Bruce Springsteen song?
No, it's a Manfred Mann cover of a Bob Dylan song.
Oh, let's take it.
Let's do it.
All right, there you go. We'll be play a little Man for Man Coven of a Bob Dylan song. I hope it's a Bob Dylan song. I think it's a Bob Dylan song. It's an unrecognized as a Bob Dylan song, and yet I believe my my schnauzer logic reminds me that it is, in fact, a Bob Dylan song. We're back on this side. I'm going to play some interesting audio of people being interviewed in line for Sarah Palin. Your jaw will drop. So if you are now waiting, go find something to prop your jaw up during the next tune. We'll be back on the other side, so stick around.
I think you're a refreshing gay boy.
Schnauzer Logic.
Everybody's gonna jump for joy. Come on. Pigeon's gonna run to him. Come on without. Gets here, everybody's gonna wanna doze. Come on without.
More fun than flushing the toilet while your spouse is in the shower.
Oh, sorry.
Schnauzer Logic.
Welcome back. We're 18 minutes into the second hour of Schnauzer Logic. Show number 69 being recorded on the 25th of November, 2009. Robin Goldstein, Goldstein. I'm host Buddy Pal. Straight white Buddhist vegetarian lesbian attorney boy trapped in the body of a recovering transsexual woman patent attorney with a bizarre sense of humor about... Oh, my God, I screwed it up. Straight white Buddhist vegetarian lesbian attorney boy trapped in the body of a recovering transsexual woman patent attorney with a bizarre sense of humor and a master's degree in city planning. Thank you. There you go. Saying welcome back and Sona Vista to Sherry Stevens.
Sona Vista.
Welcome back and Sona Vista to Sean Meehan.
Sona Vista.
And welcome back and Sona Vista to Jason Nathanson. All right, don't hurt yourself there. All right, so who they were covering that Man for Man and the Earth Band were covering that. Who wrote that song, guys?
I believe that is a Dylan composition.
Very nice.
I think you got that right. I'm 98% sure that's Dylan.
I'm going with Adam Lambert.
Quinn the Eskimo is a 1967 folk rock song written by Bob Dylan during his basement tape sessions. It became a hit in 68 for the British band Manfred Mann, who released it as a single using the title Mighty Quinn. And then Wikipedia, being Wikipedia, goes on to explain the subject of the song is the arrival of the Mighty Quinn, who is an Eskimo. I wonder where these notes were written. Not in the U.S., perhaps. Maybe overseas, I'm thinking. Some part of Europe. Who changes despair into joy, chaos into rest, and attracts attention from the animals. The metaphorical lyrics have prompted suggestions that Quinn is a drug dealer, or simply a village elder. Dill himself has said that the title character refers to an actor Anthony Quinn's role as an Eskimo in the 1959 movie The Savage Innocents. Wow.
That was a good one. That was a good one.
That seems very unlikely. Dylan is the trickster, my friend. Don't believe him.
All right.
Not enough good Eskimo drug dealer movies these days.
No, they're all shite. All the Eskimo drug dealer movies are shite. Oh, baby, you're cold as ice. Okay, so I was sniffing around Boing Boing. I mentioned at the beginning of the show today, before you guys were on the line, I highly recommend a regular or two visit to Boing Boing. And I saw a link. Boyana will get the link for this video and put it up. I don't remember what it is, but one of the nice things about having a virtual assistant is that she'll be able to listen to the show. She'll hear us talking about the Sarah Palin book signing line video, and she'll be able to find that video and put a link to it along with the website and the people who did this, because they should be getting massive credit. I just didn't have any time to do it. But listen to this. I'll leave the line open so that you guys can talk over this. And if you want me to take a break at any point to make some comments, which I'm guessing you will, you can. So these are people that were lined up outside of a Borders bookstore, a fairly, you know, I don't know if it's not a discount bookstore. It's a kind of an upscale, nice bookstore, someplace in Ohio. I saw the video. These people are nicely dressed. They're not, they're not out there with, you know, missing teeth and limbs and, you know, they're just nicely dressed. And the interviewer, who is from a website, I think probably a fairly left-leaning website, was asking people what they were doing there. And then when they would answer, you know, that they were there to see Sarah Palin, he would sort of say, well, why are you here to see Sarah Palin? And he's like, well, I like her policies. And he would say, what policies of hers do you like? So he basically was doing, I guess, Socratic method. Is that accurate, Sean?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So he's basically applying the Socratic method to a political satire, I think, and perhaps to good and shocking effect. Here we go.
Well, tell us why you're out here today.
I am out here today because I want to meet Sarah Palin.
Oh, we're out here to have a chance to meet Sarah Palin.
She makes me proud to be a woman, and she's strong. I think she's refreshing, a breath of fresh air.
She's like a rock star in the conservative movement.
She stands for what America is.
Yeah. And what do you mean by that, if you could clarify further?
Freedom,
yeah.
Our liberty. The right to speak.
She is the epitome of conservativeness. Mm-hmm. And I'm telling you, if the Republican Party doesn't back her, it doesn't matter, because she's going to get the presidency.
And do you hope she runs for president?
I'd love it. I would like to see her be our first female president.
What are some particular issues of Sarah's that you would like to see her bring to office?
Oh, gee. Help me out here, guys.
Fairness.
Yeah.
Realness.
But any policies, I guess, specifically that you of hers?
I can't think of the policies right off the bat.
She's someone who can make a difference?
Yeah. What differences would you like to see her make?
I don't know. I guess I never really thought about it.
What are her proposals for healthcare?
I'm not really sure.
Well, what are some issues of hers that you agree with?
I'm not sure where you're going with that. What issues?
How about foreign policy? What would you like to see her do in terms of foreign policy?
To be honest with you, I don't know anything about her foreign policy. I don't know. I really don't have an answer. I don't know her well enough, her thinking. I don't know what she knows or what she doesn't know. I wouldn't know half the stuff that probably some people ask me.
What do you think she would bring in terms of policy to office?
Good judgment again.
Any specifics?
I think that she would get control of some of the out-of-control spending.
Clean up the spending. Stop the spending.
She's for decreased taxes, cutting taxes, making a more, entrepreneurial, conducive environment for our country, you know, getting back to less government dependence on things, back to individuals, and just a healthy country.
What's some of the spending you'd like to see cut?
All of it.
Definitely more cost efficiencies and limit spending and cap and trade and all that.
And what are some of the problems that you have with the cap and trade as proposed by Democrats in Congress?
I don't know too much about it, but a lot of it's just the whole, like, too much spending for, it sounds great on paper, but really it means people are going to suffer in the end, so.
You want to give away your own money, that's fine, but don't tell me to give away my money. That's socialism.
Barack Obama, he wrote 2 books describing in detail exactly what he's going to do.
Yeah. And what did the books describe?
His Marxism, Leninism, socialism.
I think that she would acknowledge the system of government in the United States rather than focus of administration of czars.
Yeah. And what are some of your problems with czars?
I'm an American.
Yeah.
We don't have czars in America.
I don't think he likes the military. I think he can pretend that he does. I don't think he likes the military at all.
The way I think the country's going, I'm wondering whether or not we're going to have a presidential election in 2012.
Yeah.
I know there's some backroom talk of martial law. I'll give you one scenario that would absolutely do it, is if an atom bomb goes off in the United States.
We're no longer an exceptional country. We're no longer the shining light, the beacon to the world of what a society should look to be as far as freedom. We're just another country.
And you think Sarah will win if she throws her hat into the ring?
Well, he's naturalizing a lot of illegal aliens. He's in the process of doing that. They're saying she's not going to have the votes when you throw those numbers in.
There won't be enough white votes on one side to get a candidate through.
No way.
I don't think he's even an American citizen.
We do need to have profiling.
I need to stop it here because Sherry is looking so pained. Did I lose you guys?
No. Here's the thing with stuff like this to me at this point. I mean, we've seen this done on both sides with Palin fans. You did the same thing with Obama fans last year at a rally before he became president. And even probably today, to a lot of his supporters, aren't very clear on what his policies are, the details of his cap and trade program or health care or things like that. I think you can do this to either side. Now, some of the answers there obviously are pretty ridiculous, and martial law being declared, and this is America, and he's changing America. I mean, I feel sorry that mostly that people have such hatred and zero willingness to listen to the other side. That's what I take away mostly from something like this.
Fair enough.
I think my first thought with the initial responses was exactly Jason's. Mayor Jason's remark, which is essentially in the run-up to the 2008 election, and particularly even talking to friends of mine who are knowledgeable but not particularly keyed into politics specifically, I realized that it's a cult of personality. They loved Obama, and they loved Obama because they loved Obama. I don't think they had any concept as to what kind of policies he would support as president. I don't think they really had any idea what means by which, he would use to implement those policies. I don't think they knew. What they knew was they loved Obama. And
is that a good thing or is that a good thing or a bad thing? I'm sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say, as it got more wingnut along the, as the little interviews seem to, in my mind, kind of escalate in their level of both ignorance and insanity and anger. I feel like that kind of paranoia lives at the extremes of both political parties. And unlike Obama, who has, I think, a much broader popularity maybe people don't always like his policies, but it seems like poll after poll indicates that many Americans like Obama, even though they don't necessarily support his policies. I think that Sarah Palin's slice of the pie is much smaller and much further to the extreme, and I think this shows that. I guess I don't find this surprising. I find it horrifying, but not really surprising.
See, well, I mean, you haven't said anything about this.
I think what I find surprising is that Sarah Palin is going after this at all. That she has this...
You think she'll really run, or you think this is just like another three-year tease?
There's some ulterior motive to all this and the whole talk show, you know, circuit and, you know, entering this book. And I think she's trying to get back. I think she's trying to throw her hat in the ring for something, you know. And
she's trying to maintain relevancy, that's
right,
for sure.
Right, right. And I find it, you know, I just find it really interesting that she's, you know, she gave up the, you know, she resigned from her post as governor.
Right.
And she seems to be concentrating on a bigger picture. So I'm...
But doing less.
But doing much less.
But doing less. I mean...
I think Ann Coulter has more to worry about, quite frankly, than Barack Obama. Oh. I mean, I think that's the audience, and that's the sort of cultural position she's shooting for. God help me. I'd never say this. It is very unlikely.
Don't do it. Don't do it.
That she could mount a serious campaign for national office. You know, even I don't think that she could probably be reelected in Alaska. Or elected to any sort of other office that she hasn't held.
See, that's
and
where...
I don't think she could carpet bag someplace else and get any kind of significant state office. I think that she is looking... I don't think she's bright, and I don't think she sees the big chessboard. I think that this book was money, and I think she realizes that it's probably a lot easier to go around on book tours and saying inflammatory things, which she's good at, and generating money that way, maybe on speaking tours, maybe getting a television program or something like that, than it is to actually be responsible for creating or implementing policies. And there's a lot more scrutiny you can come under. And I think that Ann Coulter, she wants Ann Coulter's job.
Okay. I it's an interesting perspective. I have always believed that it is better to be loved than it is to be respected. Rightly or wrongly, in this country, you are in a better position, you are in a position of more power and the ability to exercise more power if you are loved, admired, than if you are respected. And I think that she is the absolute proof of that fact. I think that for her...
Well, you know, you're going right against Machiavelli there.
Okay. And he said that it's better to be feared than respected?
He said better to be feared than loved, but...
And that's how apples or, you know, corporations work. But not our government.
Well, wait a second. So Machiavelli said it's better to be feared than loved, and I'm saying it's
not
better.
A perfect, yeah.
And
I'm saying it's
better to be loved than respected. So I think it's commutative. So therefore, it is better to be feared than respected. I think that's an interesting. I don't know. That's an interesting trichotomy. I don't know. I need to think about that. You've run rings around me logically.
You also need to copyright that quickly.
2009, Robin Goldstein's Now's Logical, I'm sure. All right. I looked at the time, Jason, and we've kept you up way too fucking late again, so I apologize, my friend. I know that you're trying to get out of here.
I'll secretly curse you when I'm off the phone, but no problem right now.
What's any good news stories for tomorrow morning that you're working on?
It's Thanksgiving. What the hell are you doing listening to the radio? To news radio on Thanksgiving anyway.
What time do you go on the air?
We're on the air at 5. I'm in the office at 1:30.
So you guys are on the air at 5 o'clock. Do you get on air editing editing credit?
On Fridays we do credits, yeah.
Okay, so not during the rest of the week. But people, if people wanted to turn on their web browsers, they could, like, hear the news stories.
Absolutely. What? www.knx1070.com.
knx1070.com. All right.
And you can check me out at Twitter, which we've all established that I love, knxjason, knx_Jason.
Okay. And over at randomshow.blogspot.com, what's happening over there?
Oh, Shaheen, it's so exciting over there. I mean,
did you say Shaheen?
It's like news radio on Thanksgiving. There's nothing going on.
Well, it'd be interesting to see
if
any...
you want to look at pictures from my trip around the country...
Yes, of course. Well, we never talked to the fact that you went to Israel. I want to talk about that, too, sometime.
We can definitely talk about that. About that next week.
So where can we see pictures of you traveling around the country?
That's at randomshow.blogspot, is it? I don't know. Do you remember what it is?
Yeah, randomshow.blogspot.com. And that's where the picture of you and Oprah is?
Yes, exactly.
So Jason and Oprah... So Boyana should be able to find a photograph of Jason and Oprah. Maybe even...
You're tasking her with tests.
We are. This is kind of like a scavenger hunt.
She's going to fear you, respect you, or love you at the end of this project.
I think
maybe
any,
a little bit of all of them.
I think all of those are fine. I'm hoping that as time goes on, she will understand me more. But... but anyhow, I do thank you so much for giving up your evening before Thanksgiving. Have a wonderful day tomorrow. Hope you have an easy work day and then a delicious Thanksgiving dinner.
Thank you. You too. And Sean and Terry, you guys as well.
Lashana Tovas. And send my best to your mom and dad, please.
Will do.
All right, cool.
Thank you.
Sean, you want to stick around for the last segment?
Sure.
All right, cool. Hang on, and we'll play another tunage, and we'll come back on the other side. Listen to Nation's Logic, Robin Goldstein, Sherry Stevens, blah, 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 blah.
That's the trouble around here. Talk, talk, talk. Oh, sometimes I think I must go mad.
We'll be back with more Schnauzer Logic.
Here they come again, catch us if you can, time to get a move on, we were young with all of our might, catch us if you can, catch us if you can, catch us if you can. Time for fun. When we're getting angry, we were young with all of our might. Catch us if you can, catch us if you can, catch us if you can, catch us if you again, catch us if you can, time to get a move on, we were young with all of our might. Catch us if you can, catch us if you can, catch us if you can, catch us if you
second verse, same as the first. I'm Henry the Eighth, I am. Henry the Eighth, I am, I am. I got married to the widow next door. She's been married seven times before, and everyone was an Henry.
Henry.
She wouldn't have a Willie or a Sam.
No, Sam.
I'm her eighth door.
the eighth I am I got married to the widow next door. She's been married seven times before, and everyone was an enery. She wouldn't have a Willie or a Sam.
No, Sam.
I'm her eighth old man, I'm enery. Enery the eighth I am. H-E-N-R-Y. Enery.
Universe from the top of the Empire State Building.
Actually, it's a second bedroom with some bath mats taped to the wall.
And broadcasting loud to all time zones around the world in stereo.
It's a medium bitrate podcast. Oh, and it's mono.
This is
Schnauzer Logic.
Welcome back. We're 40 minutes into the second hour of this 69th episode of Schnauzer Logic, being recorded on the 25th of November, 2009. Robin Goldstein, www.schnauzerlogic.com, Robin at schnauzerlogic.com, twitter.com/schnauzerlogic, and over on Facebook, there's a Schnauzer Logic podcast fan book. Sona Vista, welcome back, Sherry Stevens.
Sona Vista,
and welcome back, Sean Meehan.
Sona Vista.
The day before Thanksgiving, which if then is the day before Black Friday.
Yes.
Which is the commemoration of the day that President Lincoln freed the slaves.
Yes.
Isn't that what Black Friday's all about? No? Did I get that wrong? I have more knowledge about Quinn the Eskimo. Black Friday is the biggest shopping day, right? That's the... That's the idea. Are you a big shopper on Black Friday?
No.
Well,
when I was married years ago, we used to have someone clean our house every other week, and they would come on Wednesdays. And I remember feeling quite proud of myself that we would go out on Wednesday, would take the day off, and go shopping on that Wednesday before Thanksgiving, and try to get the bulk of our stuff done.
For you do your Christmas shopping the day before Thanksgiving.
We did.
Wow.
Now, of course,
I just don't
buy any presents. But I always remember feeling, like Christmas was such a big deal. Of course, the kids were smaller, but I always felt like I needed to get a leg up on the shopping, and so that was my way of getting it. Wasn't crowded. We would go to the mall and just try to knock it out, and then it would be all done. So then Friday would be spent cleaning up and decorating and wrapping presents.
Wow. So you were ready for Christmas on the 27th of December. I mean, you were already a month before, you were already done. And
no, because ultimately what happened is that then you just continued to buy.
Oh.
Because you feel like you have to.
Conspicuous consumption.
Yes.
Well, that is the American way.
It is.
And there was no Black Friday back then, right? I mean,
no,
that's a fairly recent... I mean, there's
it's
been...
I think it's a recent term, and I know that years ago, I remember hearing Black Friday was the every other Friday that a lot of construction workers would get off. No, there was like an every other Friday thing
really?
For a while. They
okay.
called it Black Friday. Now, I could be wrong.
Indian Thursday and...
I don't know, but
two for Tuesday.
Maybe it was right,
no
yeah.
repeat Wednesday.
It seems to me that's where the term I had heard. That's what the definition of the term was.
And now, of course, it's big sales, right? That's the
huge.
Idea. It's like these huge. You can buy a DVD player for a penny. The idea being to get people into the stores and create mayhem and jumpstart the economy and the selling season.
Yep.
Are you a big Black Friday shopper?
No.
Okay.
I'm not a big shopper in any case. So, assigning a color or non-color to a day does not make it any more enticing for me to shop on that day. Red Friday, White Friday.
Nude Friday might do it.
It's possible. It depends on who I think will be shopping. I find that most of the people who are willing to be nude are people I don't want to see nude.
Yeah.
So that's not always a good thing. But
and then Cyber Monday, right? Isn't that the is it the following Monday after?
Now that I might get into
Cyber Monday, right? Yep. Which is all of the online e-tailers, right? Who are competing with the brick and mortar. Why do I shouldn't know any of these fucking terms? Should I?
No.
I mean, these are not none of these are real words. What's going on here? Help me, Wizard Lizard.
Mr. Wizard.
You're my
in
only
an age of wonders and neologizing. And I think that someone, I forget the term, but I was talking to Chip not long ago, and he identified someone in the business of, I can't remember the acronym for it, but basically one of the movers and shakers in how to get your online presence up at the top of the list. You know, how do you come in on the first page on a Google search?
Right.
One of these guys, and he said, I said, oh boy, I'm not familiar with this guy. And he said, he's the guy who coined the term, and I don't remember the term. But, I mean, clearly, this is a road to a kind of pseudo-generic thing that I don't remember the term, I don't know the guy, but he is the guy who coined that term.
Yeah. Coining terms. Once again, we've hit a cul-de-sac.
I haven't coined a term yet, and that's why I'm in this little, you know, socioeconomic ghetto
now. Are you in a fight for your life now with somebody sort of trying to put some piano wire around your neck and you're kind of moving your phone under your jacket to get better of leverage?
No, this is just a quality product that I bought last Friday.
Yes.
And it's taking a dump on me.
All right. All right.
Yeah, it's right where my mouth is. So no change in proximity or aspect.
Well, you don't want to be taking a dump right where your mouth is. You know, that's what they. All right. We do need editing.
You know, one of the things, though, returning to the previous segment, I think you're right.
Please.
I think that respect is not as potent as love. I think respect is a more rational process. And as such, I think it is a more vulnerable process to critique, to subversion. I think love, being a very irrational process, is more immune to kind of to the factual world and whatever facts might be arrayed against the idea of loving something or someone can be dismissed far more easily by an individual in a state of love than, you know, respect can be undermined very easily by fact-based argument.
Respect is frequently given grudgingly.
Yeah. Yes.
Whereas love is not. Oh, except in the case of my marriage, but that was.
Well, I think not just Sarah Palin is an example of this. The last election was an example of this. People loved Barack Obama.
Yes.
I don't think there were many people who loved John McCain. You know, I'm sure that there was some small cadre of like-minded
codgers,
rebels, or whatever he was. But what was
coot. He was a coot.
A maverick.
Geezer. Coot. Geezer.
Depends where, I don't know. But but I think you saw the sort of, that kind of fervent, almost insane, unreachable kind of support that was offered by many to Obama and didn't seem to come to McCain.
I remember being in college in a fraternity and going to house meetings and watching the president, who was a face man, and thinking to myself, this guy is popular because people like him. I understand that that's, I guess, a tautology, but he's popular because people like him and for no other reason. I think Oprah, you cannot explain to me the measure of Oprah's success compared to other performers with equal or greater talent. There is something about her that people like, and you can't argue with that, and therefore she is given great sway. I think Obama is given the same kind of sway. And the reality is that for many, many people, Sarah Palin is given that as well. Rudy Giuliani, not given that. Rudy Giuliani given that grudging respect, you know, America's mayor, blah, blah, blah. But even New Yorkers who, you know, respected him didn't like him. Mm-hmm. You know, they always thought he was kind of weaselly, you know, and nasally. Nasally weaselly. He was a character from the next Harry Potter book.
I was going to say, I liked it when he teamed up with Krabby Apple.
Exactly.
Nasally, weasley, these are your last days on earth.
So I think when I listen to the people in line, I'm not going to go back and play it, but you'll be able to find the whole video and see it. What I think is, I'll tell you what I take away from that audio. What I take away from that audio, I'm sorry Jason isn't on the line anymore because I browbeat him with this, is we're doing a very poor job of educating people in this country and apparently have been for probably 40 or 50 years. Because even if you love someone, you should be able to apply a kind of critical thinking. And we're not talking about collegiate debate winning critical thinking. I'm just talking about the ability to discern the issues presented by candidates who are running your democracy. And I don't know that the people who were, and I'm not being harsh about these people. I think that they seemed, for the most part, yeah, there were wackos in the pack. And of course, whoever edited it for effect. So if there was someone who had a sensible answer, that probably got edited out of this. I understand that. It's not an even distribution of the answers. But the people who sounded very nice and very sincere were not able to express their thoughts in a meaningful way. And I remember being in high school and an English teacher said, well, what does that mean? And it's like, well, I don't know. You know what it means. It's like, if you can't explain what it means, then you don't know what it means. Mm-hmm. And that's the same situation. If you can't explain what she stands for, then you don't know what she stands for. And therefore, you can say that you really like her, but you really are not in a position to say much more about it. And so if the only reason you're voting for her is because you like her, that's okay. But that's different than trying to paint her with a mantle or a covering, right, of authenticity and knowledge and voraciousness and, you know, all of these things which, you know, kind of fall apart under even minimal scrutiny. Your thoughts? Jack Tremond.
I can just say for myself that I think that there the difference I see between the kind of love and the kind of irrational exuberance, if someone else had already unfortunately coined that, but the kind of irrational exuberance that I saw people demonstrating for Obama, some feeling that he was some kind of almost a religious savior, seemed very positive to me. It seemed like there was not a lot of negative emotion that was associated with the people I knew who were very excited about Obama. The people who are very excited about Sarah Palin seem to be, at least in this little sample group, seem to be more upset. This seems to be a little darker to me.
Well,
your thoughts?
I always feel like that there's a little bit of this darkness whenever there is a conservative candidate that people seem to like. It's almost as if they tread, you know, they go lightly.
I'm not sure I understand what you're talking about. Explain that to me. Who are the theys in your?
Well, the theys. Well, I'm just thinking that the people that are following the conservative candidates, you know, what Sean was just saying in terms of there seems to be a little, I don't want to say fanaticism, but certainly, you know, there's some strong feelings and you know, he was just saying there's a little bit more darkness. That's how I interpret it.
Hmm.
You know, when people would make jokes during the Obama campaign, particularly, I recall very specifically, one that Hillary Clinton made at Obama's expense, that he was going to kind of take office and the skies were going to open and, you know,
yes,
a wonderful new day would arrive. She had quite a scathing take on this very phenomenon of thinking that Obama, through sheer force of will, was going to bring us a wonderful new world and a wonderful new day. One of the things that I don't feel when I listen to the supporters of, say, Sarah Palin, or very arch
conservative right-wing politicians, is that sense that into office, things will kind of be wonderful, and people will be joined in common purpose, and we will find the best in our national kind of psyche. And what I hear, and maybe this is, if I listen to it and actually listen and read the text of what these people were saying, I would find myself thinking otherwise. But it seems to me like when Sarah Palin takes charge, there isn't going to be a new sense of unity in this, you know, fabulous new gestalt of Americanism and what have you. We're going to get rid of the people who aren't playing ball. We're going to...
Via gonna, helicopter with a rifle.
Yeah, we're gonna take them down. Of those who are ruining America. It seemed like a more subtractive process that Sarah Palin would instigate, rather than Obama's kind of inclusive process. Mm-hmm. That's, I think, what kind of creeps me out about. If there's any difference that I feel between the sort of Obama bots, wasn't that what people were calling them?
Yeah.
You know, the supporters of Obama during the election. And these Sarah Palin bots.
All right. You seem very down. Whenever the last couple of weeks, and this is not a criticism at all, this is merely an observation. When we get into politics, your whole being seems to shift into a kind of droopy dog thing.
Well, don't invite me on for those segments.
No. As I said, it was not a criticism. No.
It's
not a criticism. It's an observation. And I think it's interesting because when we spoke last year, there was, I think, a lot of... I think you've been beaten up by this process.
Oh, I most definitely have. I don't think that there's any doubt that watching the response, the media response, the political response to... what seemed to me to have been at least fairly honest and overtures toward bipartisanism, to see it rejected roundly, and to see the kind of insanity that has risen up to fill what are fairly legitimate news sources. You know, these kinds of bizarre stories. You know, we talked about the birther crisis actually bringing down Lou Dobbs. I feel like the intransience of certain aspects of our society that we hope that an Obama administration with both houses of Congress, you know, same party on his side.
Yeah.
It didn't come out the way I had hoped.
You got 30 seconds. Give me something you're thankful for.
I like being on this show.
I love you. All right. Give me something you're thankful for. You got 30 seconds.
I am thankful for my health. I'm thankful for my children. I'm thankful for you as my friend. I'm thankful for my home. And I'm thankful to live in beautiful California. I love it here.
There you go.
Every day. Today is 70 degrees. It was gorgeous.
It was. It was magnificent today. I got to say ditto, because otherwise I'm going to sound kind of shallow and but I'm a big fan of chocolate and gadgets. Black Friday, Black Monday, the season finale of Curb Your Enthusiasm with the Seinfeld reunion. Lots and lots of television. My TiVo. Yeah, I mean, I'm not. Yeah, what you said.
Yeah,
I'm thankful for you. I'm thankful for Bayana.
Yes, I am too.
Who was writing our stuff, and there you go. And the fact that we were able to get the gang back together again.
Second week in a row, we're on a roll.
We blew off John DeCoven. We were trying to get him on, but we're going to keep it short because I know you got to run, and we got preparations. But go over to, it was not Laugh Loud Productions. What is it? Bunjo's Comedy, whatever. You can find it on the website. John was written up in the Contra Costa Times.
Right.
They did a whole thing about John, and it's worth taking a read, and we let him plug that.
We can post it on Schnauzer Logic
Facebook
page. Yes, we
can post it on Schnauzer Logic Facebook page, blah, 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 blah. The other thing is that after the show today,
what I'm going to do. So for those of you who are interested, after the show finishes and we're done with the whole thing, I'm going to play uninterrupted in its entirety Alice's Restaurant Massacre.
Oh, good.
By Arlo Guthrie.
It's a tradition.
It is a tradition. It runs for about 18 minutes. So if you're someone who's listening to this and wondering, like, the show seems to be over and yet there's another 20 minutes left, that's why. That's it. And you don't have to listen to that if you don't want to. But
very
for me,
entertaining. I suggest that you do. I listen to it every year.
Every year,
time,
right?
And it never gets old.
There you go. I love you, Sean. Thank you so much. Have a great Thanksgiving. And love to you and Michelle.
Love you guys.
All right. Maybe we'll have a maybe even have you in the studio next week.
Sounds great.
All right. Take care, my friend.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. And love you guys, too. I love you, Mom. I love you, Dad. I miss you both. Show up, pay attention, tell the truth, and don't be attached to the outcome. And we'll see you next week. Have a great Thanksgiving, a good weekend, and take care of yourself, guys. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends. Bye. Fucked it up. No do-overs. No do-overs. Damn.
This is over now, and you just got to deal with it.
I want you to know it's over.
It's over, Jenny. It's over.
It's over, Harvey. I'm sorry. I need to get on with my life.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Elvis has left the building.
I'm in my vagina.
This song is called Alice's Restaurant. It's about Alice and the restaurant. But Alice's Restaurant is not the name of the restaurant. That's just the name of the song. And that's why I call the song Alice's Restaurant. You can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. You can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. Walk right in, it's around the back, just a half a mile from the railroad track. And you can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. Now it all started two Thanksgivings ago. It was on 2 years ago on Thanksgiving when my friend and I went up to visit Alice at the restaurant. But Alice doesn't live in the restaurant. She lives in the church nearby the restaurant in the bell tower with her husband Ray and Fatsha the dog. And living in the bell tower like that, they got a lot of room downstairs where the pews used to be. And having all that room, seeing as how they took out all the pews, they decided that they didn't have to take out their garbage for a long time. We got up there, we found all the garbage in there, and we decided it'd be a friendly gesture for us to take the garbage down to the city dump. So we took the half a ton of garbage, put it in the back of a red VW microbus, took shovels and rakes and implements of destruction, and headed on toward the city dump. Well, we got there, and there's a big sign and a chain across the dump saying closed on Thanksgiving. And we had never heard of a dump closed on Thanksgiving before. And with tears in our eyes, we drove off into the sunset looking for another place to put the garbage. We didn't find one till we came to a side road. And off the side of the side road was another 15-foot cliff. And at the bottom of the cliff was another pile of garbage. And we decided that one big pile is better than two little piles, and rather than bring that one up, we decided to throw ours down. That's what we did. Drove back to the church, had a Thanksgiving dinner that couldn't be beat, went to sleep and didn't get up until the next morning when we got a phone call from Officer Obie. Said, kid, we found your name on an envelope at the bottom of a half a ton of garbage, and wanted to know if you had any information about it. And I said, yes, sir, Officer Obie, cannot tell a lie. I put that envelope under that garbage. After speaking to Obie for about 45 minutes on the telephone, we finally arrived at the truth of the matter and said that we had to go down and pick up the garbage and also had to go down and speak to him at the police officer station. So we got in the red VW microbus with the shovels and rakes and implements of destruction, headed on toward the police officer station. Now, friends, there was only one or two things that Obi could have done at the police station, and the first was that he could have given us a medal for being so brave and honest on the telephone, which wasn't very likely, and we didn't expect it. Another thing was that he could have bawled us out and told us never to be seen driving garbage around the vicinity again, which is what we expected. But when we got to the police officer station, there was a third possibility that we hadn't even counted upon, and we was both immediately arrested, handcuffed. And I said, Obi, I don't think I can pick up the garbage with these handcuffs on. He said, shut up, kid. Get in the back of the patrol car, and that's what we did, and sat in the back of the patrol car and drove to the, quote, scene of the crime, unquote. I want to tell you about the town of Stockbridge, Massachusetts, where this happened here. They got three stop signs, two police officers, and one police car. But when we got to the scene of the crime, there was five police officers and three police cars, being the biggest crime of the last 50 years, and everybody wanted to get in a newspaper story about it. And they was using up all kinds of cop equipment that they had hanging around the police officer station. They was taking plaster, tire track, footprints, dog smelling prints, and they took 27 8x10 color glossy photographs with circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each one explaining what each one was to be used as evidence against us. Took pictures of the approach, the getaway, the northwest corner, the southwest corner, and that's not to mention the aerial photography. After the ordeal, we went back to the jail. Obi said he was gonna put us in the cell. Said, kid, I'm gonna put you in the cell. I want your wallet and your belt. And I said, Obi, I can understand you wanting my wallet so I don't have any money to spend in the cell, but what do you want my belt for? And it said, kid, we don't want any hangings. Said, Obi, did you think I was gonna hang myself for littering? Obi said he was making sure, and friends, Obi was, cause he took out the toilet seat so I couldn't hit myself over the head and drown. And he took out the toilet paper so I couldn't bend the bars, roll the toilet paper out the window, slide down the roll, and have an escape. Obi was making sure, and it was about 4 or 5 hours later that Alice, remember Alice? It's a song about Alice. Alice came by and with a few nasty words to Obi on the side, bailed us out of jail. We went back to the church, had another Thanksgiving dinner that couldn't be beat, and didn't get up until the next morning when we all had to go to court. We walked in, sat down. Obi came in with the 27 8x10 covered glossy pictures with the circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back each one. Sat down. Man came in, said, all rise. We all stood up, and Obi stood up with the 27 8x10 covered glossy pictures, and the judge walked in, sat down with the CNI dog, and he sat down. We sat down. Obi looked at the CNI dog. And then the 27 8x10 covered glossy pictures with the circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each one, and looked at the CNI dog. And then the 27 8x10 colored glossy pictures with the circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each one, and began to cry, cause Obi came to the realization that it was a typical case of American blind justice and there wasn't nothing he could do about it. And the judge wasn't gonna look at the 27 8x10 colored glossy pictures with the circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each one explaining what each one was to be used as evidence against us. And we was fined $50 and had to pick up the garbage in the snow, but that's not what I came to tell you about. Came to talk about the draft. You got a building down New York City, it's called Whitehall Street, where you walk in and you get injected, inspected, detected, infected, neglected, and selected. I went down to get my physical examination one day, and I walked in, I sat down, got good and drunk the night before, so I looked and felt my best when I went in that morning. Cause I wanted to look like the all-American kid from New York City. Man, I wanted to feel like the, I wanted to be the all-American kid from New York, and I walked in, sat down, I was hung down, brung down, hung up, and all kinds of mean, nasty, ugly things. And I walked in, I sat down, he gave me a piece of paper, said, kid, see the psychiatrist, room 604. And I went up there, I said, shrink, I want to kill. And I want to see blood and gore and guts and veins in my teeth. Eat dead, burnt bodies. I mean, kill. 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 And I started jumping up and down, yelling, kill. Kill. And it started jumping up and down with me, and we was both jumping up and down, yelling, kill. Kill. And the sergeant came over, pinned the metal on me, sent me down the hall, said, you're our boy. Feel too good about it. Proceeded on down the hall, getting more injections, inspections, detections, neglections, and all kinds of stuff that they was doing to me at the thing there. And I was there for 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours. I was there for a long time, going through all kinds of mean, nasty, ugly things, and I was just having a tough time there. And they was inspecting, injecting every single part of me, and they wasn't leaving no part untouched. Proceeded through, and I went, finally came to see the very last man. I walked in, sat down after a whole big thing there, and I walked up and said, what do you want? He said, kid, we only got one question. Have you ever been arrested? And I proceeded to tell him the story of Alice's restaurant, Massacree, with full orchestration and five-part harmony and stuff like that. And then all the phenomena stopped me right there and said, kid, did you ever go to court? I proceeded to tell him the story of the 27 8x10 colored glossy pictures with the circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each one. It stopped me right there and said, kid, I want you to go over and sit down on that bench that says Group W. Now, kid! And I walked over to the bench there, and there's Group W is where they put you if you may not be moral enough to join the army after committing your special crime. And there was all kinds of mean, nasty, ugly-looking people on the bench there. There's mother rapers, father stabbers, father rapers. Father rapers sitting right there on the bench next to me, and one, he was mean and nasty and ugly and horrible and crime-fighting guys are sitting there on the bench. And the meanest, ugliest, nastiest one, the meanest father raper of them all, was coming over to me, and he was mean and ugly and nasty and horrible and all kinds of things. And he sat down next to me and said, kid, what'd you get? Said, I didn't get nothing. I had to pay $50 and pick up the garbage. I said, what were you arrested for, kid? And I said, littering. And they all moved away from me on the bench there to carry eyeball and all kinds of mean, nasty things till I said, and creating a nuisance. And they all came back, shook my hand, and we had a great time on the bench talking about crime, mother stabbing, father raping, all kinds of groovy things that we was talking about on the bench. And everything was fine. We were smoking cigarettes and all kinds of things until the sergeant came over, had some paper in his hand, held it up and said, kids, this piece of paper's got 47 words, 37 sentences, 58 words. We want to know the details of the crime, time, crime, and all the kind of thing you got to say, pretend to about the crime. We want to know the arresting officer's name, and all the kind of thing you got to say. And it talked for 45 minutes, and nobody understood a word that he said. But we had fun filling out the forms and playing with the pencils on the bench there. And I filled out the Massacree with the four-part harmony and wrote it down there just like it was, and everything was fine. And I put down a pencil and I turned over the piece of paper, and there on the other side, in the middle of the other side, away from everything else on the other side, in parentheses, capital letters, quotated, read the following words. Kid, you rehabilitated yourself. I went over to the sergeant and said, Sergeant, you've got a lot of damn gall to ask me if I've rehabilitated myself. I'm sitting here on a bench. I mean, I'm sitting here on a Group W bench. Because you want to know if I'm moral enough to join the army, burn women, kids, houses, and villages after being a litter bug. He looked at me and said, Kid, we don't like your kind. And we're going to send your fingerprints off to Washington, and friends, somewhere in Washington, enshrined in some little folders, a study in black and white of my fingerprints. And the only reason I'm singing you the song now is because you may know somebody in a similar situation. Or you may be in a similar situation, and if you're in a situation like that, there's only one thing you can do, is walk into the shrink wherever you are. Just walk in, say, shrink. You can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant and walk out. You know, if one person, just one person does it, they may think he's really sick and they won't take him. And if two people do it in harmony, they think they're both faggots and it won't take either of them. And if three people do it, can you imagine three people walking in, singing a bar, Alice's restaurant, and walking out? They may think it's an organization. And can you imagine 50 people a day? I said 50 people a day walking in, singing a bar, Alice's restaurant, and walking out. And friends, they may think it's a movement. And that's what it is. The Alice's restaurant anti-massacre creed movement. And all you gotta do to join is to sing it the next time it comes around on the guitar with feeling. So we'll wait till it comes around on the guitar here. Sing it when it does. Here it comes. You can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant. You can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant. Walk right in, it's around the back, just a half a mile from the railroad track. You can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant. That was horrible. You want Ann Warren stuff, you gotta sing loud. You could put a lot. I've been singing the song now for 25 minutes. I could sing it for another 25 minutes. I'm not proud. Or tired. So we'll wait till it comes around again. This time with four-part harmony and feeling. We're just waiting for it to come around is what we're doing. All right now. You can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant, excepting Alice. You can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant. So walk right